Well, hello, my fine friends. My frying friends. My frying
fans. What friends are you frying, Stuart?
I'm frying fans. I don't know. Hello, my fine friends. I can't speak today.
You're over two.
Can we try one more time?
Absolutely.
Hello, my
not.
Fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm host Stuart Butler. I'm joined today with the very amused and very naughty Adam Stoker. How are you, Adam?
Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Stoker, and I want you to know I appreciate all my fine friends, all the Desties, and I'm really grateful for you all.
Oh, you're such a sycophant. Man, I hate to do this, Adam, but you owe an apology to our guest today, and I want you to do it sincerely. I want you to do it publicly on this show. But yeah. Before you do, Matt Vinson, how are you, sir? Welcome to Destination Discourse.
I'm doing great, and I'm hoping we're leaving all of that in.
100%.
Oh, we don't edit this show.
Yeah, the editing would require effort, and there's no effort put into this show. So
everything you
just heard is going in. But Matt, welcome to the show. Adam, I'm going to give you the floor and let you make good from your prior discretions.
Yeah.
Indiscretions, and not discretions.
First of all, Stuart,
I feel like I'm drunk today. This is ridiculous. Like, I can't speak.
Well,
I'm learning English on the fly. This is weird. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
This may be the perfect day to record with you. That's what I think. I will say I appreciate you tripping over the entire intro multiple times to make me feel better for the mistake that I made that I'm currently apologizing for. And I would love to pretend that I had this like huge client project come up and it was an emergency and there was no way I could make it. To be honest with you, I had an in-person meeting, didn't look how close that meeting was to the calendar invite that we had for this, and I sat there enjoying my in-person lunch far beyond the time that the lunch was supposed to end, and had multiple missed calls from you during that lunch, and you were even asking if everything was okay, because it's rare that I disappear and go MIA like that, but I did this time. And so to Matt specifically, I am sorry.
I accept your apology, Adam. I think first drink is on you when we meet up next, maybe in Portland for DI annual convention.
Done.
Oh,
you know
wow.
What? I wish Stuart were as forgiving as you. Usually I need 4 months free because you messed one thing up. You know what I mean?
Is that your impression of me? I'll be honest. If you just give me beer, then I'll forgive any of your transgressions. It is fine. Absolutely fine. But yeah, Adam did miss our first scheduled recording for this, and I'd already had to reschedule it. So I felt like this was the episode that was never meant to be. But
here we are,
guys. I'm very excited. Matt, you're fairly new to the industry. So we're going to get an outsider's perspective. My Lord, what is going on today? We're going to get an outsider's perspective. You may see me like melt down today, apparently, because I don't know what's going on. It's very weird.
You know what, Stuart? Do you get migraines? I'm being dead serious right now. I'm not.
No, I've never had a migraine. But am I acting like I've had a stroke?
Well, so I just had this weird. We were having our executive team meeting one time, and I had this weird thing where all of a sudden, the words that I was trying to say weren't making it to my mouth. Like the connection between my brain and my mouth was completely.
That would have to be really hard for you, I'd imagine, because it's one of your favorite things to do.
What's that?
Like just speak. Like take words from your brain to your mouth.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely more fun when you get it right. But I got to the point where I couldn't speak.
That's good.
I couldn't speak. And I ended up just like realizing I had a migraine headache. My eyes went blurry and everything. And I had to get up, leave the meeting and let them continue without me because, it was a migraine. And that's what was causing it.
My eyes are definitely blurry. I don't know if I would be able to tell if it was a migraine blur.
For those that don't know, Stuart's visually impaired, so he's making a visual impairment joke there.
Yeah, I'm allowed to, right? I have a license to do that. Should we just kick on with the show and pretend like none of this nonsense happened? I think it's probably time to move on. Well, Matt, your first time on the show, man, you're in for a treat. We expect all our new guests to give us their best, you know, impromptu dance while they listen to it. But it's time for the greatest segment in Destination Marketing. It's time for Stu's News.
Tell you what you need. It's Stu, Stu, Stu. Oh, I see dancing.
He's a hot head bobber.
Yep. It's a Stu crew. Stu's News.
Adam, is it appropriate for us to put peer pressure on a guest like that? I don't know what to do.
Can I say though, because I am I'm a Destie, and I've told Adam this in the past, and I don't know if I'm the first guest to say this. I hate that song.
Thank you. I knew I loved you, Matt.
I absolutely hate it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I'll be honest, you're in the minority. And
Yeah,
I think most
that's
of
what I
them
feel.
like it because it annoys me. So
but I will
that's
thank
why I
Adam.
like it.
Adam sent me a shirt when I told him that last time, and I should have had it with me. I left it at the office, but oh
that's
man, it was worth
amazing.
it. It was great.
Well, thank you for being a Destie. We appreciate it. And thank you for hating the jingle that is clearly not good. But today's Stu's News, we're going to talk more about Claude. I know I've changed your life in many, many way, many ways, Adam, but one of them is introducing you to Claude Cowork. You started dabbling with Claude Code. And now, just this past week, they came out with another one. I mean, Claude is on top of things. Anthropic is crushing it right now. They just came out with Claude Design, which is a whole nother compartment to their toolbox. Holy cow, what a game changer. You've been playing around with it, I know. You want to talk a little bit about what Claude Design is and how you've been using it?
Yeah, I would say this is one of those few situations where you've actually changed my life for the better, introducing me to Claude and all its products.
It's totally fair.
I saw Claude Design come out last week, and it was all over X or Twitter. And my daughter had a cheer competition last weekend. And for those that are cheer dads or moms, you know this. But those cheer competitions, you have a lot of sitting for about 3 minutes of watching your child perform. And then the rest of the time is just a whole bunch of other people's kids. So a lot of time that I'm not really going to be actually watching, with the exception of the few minutes that my daughter performed. And by the way, she crushed it. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she made the cheer squad. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, different
I
daughter.
Know that was, okay.
Different daughter. So I've got one daughter who made the high school cheer team, which is awesome. So excited for her. But then I've got my second daughter who's on a competitive cheer team as well. And anyway, long story. But the whole reason I say that is I had an hour and a half to kill between when I needed her to be there and when I was going to watch her perform. And so I went and connected to the Wi-Fi and said, I'm going to try Claude Code. And I thought my first Claude Design. And I thought my first project, I would build a design system for Destination Discourses brand. And just to, because we don't have one, for one, we never built a style guide or anything. and all you did was make a logo with AI, right? And so I went in and I took that logo and I gave it all of our transcripts, and I asked it to build a design framework for Destination Discourse. And then using that framework, which, by the way, it was super easy to create. And then when I created, of course, went through revisions. I was doing logo revisions within Claude Design. I have never been a designer. Like I might have a skill set here or there, but design has never been.
Yeah, I've seen your slide decks. You're definitely not a designer.
Brutal, right? Yeah. And yet you still signed on the dotted line. But anyway, yeah. So I built the design system within Claude Design, and then I asked it for a prompt and the connection to build the website in Claude Code. And so what Claude is building is a product infrastructure that just allows any strategist to be incredibly dangerous by if you understand how to build, organize, and synthesize context. You are going to be able to do just about anything far beyond your tactical capabilities that you've had in the past through leveraging multiple of their products together. In that, it was that evening when I got home that I actually finished the website and sent Stuart a link to the Destination Discourse website. He and I are making some final revisions and we'll push that live soon. But
I'll be honest,
crazy.
I think it'll be live by the time this publishes, you know, so we can go ahead and say, go to destinationdiscourse.com and you can see that website.
Which, crazy.
And now put you on a clock, by the way.
Better secure that domain, right?
Well, Stuart's got the domain. We just got to point it.
Perfect.
Like, that's all that's left is just pointing it to the domain. So, yeah, really, really cool that I was able to put that together. Something I never, ever could have done in the past.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, at the same time, OpenAI says, "Oh, we just released Images version 2 for ChatGPT," which is a significant upgrade, right? Because it's allowing the gobbledygook sort of writing not to happen, but it's also allowing you to contextually change stuff. So you can say, "Hey, I like that image, but just tweak this one thing, and it does it better than it used to." I mean, if that was the only thing that came out this week, I'd be like over the moon. But Anthropic is leaving OpenAI in the dust, right? Not just from a product perspective, but also from a revenue perspective. If you look at their revenue growth over the last couple of months, they're owning the code space, and now they're beginning to own the service level space as well. So they're making billions and billions of dollars now, net new every month. It's insane. So when they eventually IPO, some people are saying now they're going to be valued even higher than ChatGPT, or OpenAI, which is crazy. No one would have thought about that 2 months ago. So Claude, I'm fully on the Claude train, and we were even having conversations in our office right now. As you know, we've given everyone a $20 a month ChatGPT license up until now. I think we'll probably keep that. In addition, we'll probably give everyone, or at least a good chunk of people, $100 Claude license, because you need the $100 if you're going to use
Oh,
Claude
yeah.
Code and CoWork and Design, right? Because you're going to burn through the $20 too quickly. But we're now sort of thinking about that. Like, where does that additional $100 a month per employee, that's not inexpensive, where does that come from? But I think if I was a small DMO right now and I had very limited resources, guess what? You just got infinitely more powerful. The ability to build a website, there's no way to understate this. If someone like Adam can design and build a website in under 24 hours, he's got no design skills, no technical skills. He can barely speak English. Oh no, that's me.
Well, bad day to make that joke.
yeah, it probably is. But you get my point, right? Like
Yes.
anyone now with the right scrappiness, it can do anything they want to do. Like the cost of creation has gone down to zero. And so this is a great opportunity for DMOs. We got to embrace it. If we wait on this one, we're going to be in trouble. I'd also like to ask you, Adam, we'll let Matt weigh in on this in a second, but I do want to understand, maybe this is a whole nother episode, but what does this mean for the agencies in the
Yeah.
space? You know, how are you guys responding? So maybe we'll put a pin in that question because it could go on for the rest of the episode. But Matt, what
Yeah.
do you think about all this new technology? Are you guys using it in Visit Dallas?
Yeah, we're kind of in the same boat. We've been working with Todd Brook of Unchained AI for about a year now, kind of dipping our toe in using his platform, which is great. But for us, we've kind of been on 20, 25 of our 70 staff have had access to his platform, which essentially includes ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude, but it's kind of a wrapped and safe program. And it's usually a version behind, right? So we just got back from Destinations Texas Innovation Summit, which was a 2-day conference solely focused on AI. We're now ready to pull the same trigger you are, Stuart, where I'm ready to bite the bullet and try and get as many of our staff onto Claude as possible. We were fortunate to have Jeanette Rausch, whose sister lives in Fort Worth, stop by a couple weeks ago. And I had her sit with our CEO and CMO and show them what she's doing with Claude and Claude Code and setting up her own operating system. And I'm like, this is where we need to go. This is how we empower everyone on our staff to be essentially have their own agent working alongside them and empowering them and making everyone on our staff more efficient. So what's interesting to me, and I agree with you that Claude is overtaking from a revenue standpoint. Where I'm interested to see is from a brand standpoint, because we're all very heavily into AI. But if I ask people on my staff who's not in it day to day, they still know the name ChatGPT. I don't think they know the name Claude or Anthropic. And I wonder how long it's going to take from the brand awareness or brand standpoint for them to catch up.
I think it'll be less time than you think at this point. I mean, I believe there's a future where ChatGPT does not survive. Like, I think that the amount of money they've been getting investment money is crazy, and they've been focusing so much on the consumer side and not on the code side and the other stuff that Anthropic does. I think you're going to see a big pivot from OpenAI in the next couple of months. But I go back to early internet. You know, the brand for getting on the internet originally
AOL.
was AOL, right? The browser that you used originally was Netscape. The search engine you knew that before Google was a verb was Yahoo, right? So it's very rarely in technology revolutions that it is the first to market that gets the big jump that survives. So I could imagine a day fairly soon where Claude overtakes from a brand perspective.
Yeah, I think I would probably push back on you with that one because I think Claude and ChatGPT are in separate lanes at this point. Like Claude's product set is so wonderful to us because in our business operation, it makes it so efficient and easy. But ChatGPT, I think they're probably at this point going to have to stay focused on the consumer to survive because I don't think their enterprise product is going to catch up to Claude. And I think you're going to see that separation that ChatGPT will likely be the consumer product, and Claude is going to continue to win in enterprise and organizations.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree because I think what's, one, there's not nearly as much revenue opportunity, right, on the consumer side. Like the vast majority of users on OpenAI's platform on ChatGPT are free users, right? They're not even spending the $20 a month. So to get the consumer to use that, I think once Gemini is baked into iPhones, once more business folks and white collar workers are using Claude for the day to day. Like I continue to use ChatGPT as my sort of default because I've trained my brain, my muscle memories there. But I'm finding myself testing, well, on the Claude chat piece, could I do what I've been doing in OpenAI's ChatGPT? And I'm
And you
finding
can.
increasingly, especially with Opus, the latest update from Claude, like I'm feeling the results are as good, if not better. Where the friction point is for me is ChatGPT has all my context. It knows me really well. So there's a little bit of a burden on me to retrain Claude to get to the level of knowledge of me that ChatGPT is. But I could see a world in the very near future where I'm not even paying for ChatGPT anymore, that I'm just using Claude's suite of products.
I'm not discounting Copilot or Gemini because they have more money than God. I think they're going to figure it out eventually. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of who wins this arms race.
And it definitely is an arms race. So,
Can I briefly just provide a word of caution to destinations who want to get into Claude? So it's really, really important that if you're going to leverage a tool like Claude, that you understand how to build and provide context. And so before every project, and I would say every organization, and I've just gone through this exercise on my side, every organization needs to build kind of their master context document that provides the angle by which Claude should be thinking about the execution of every project. So this is a combination of your operational documentation, your brand strategy, your destination strategy. You have to load every bit of data and documentation that you can into a master context document that you can then run as like the starting point for every project that someone in the organization is going to do on Claude so that you can have that operational consistency. Otherwise, I do feel like there's going to be danger of hallucination. I think there's going to be danger of disjointed processes, and it's going to be a little bit the wild, wild west in your organization if there's not that centralized documentation up front. So every organization needs someone in the organization in charge of curating context and providing tools to everyone on the staff to give them a head start when they start a project.
yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm thinking more and more about these tools like employees, right? You wouldn't bring someone onto your team and just throw them in and say, do this project without context, right? You're going to do some kind of orientation and you're going to give them some resources like your strategic plan or your brand standards. So, and I think we've got to increasingly treat the AI like that. I also am beginning to think about what is the new org structure look like? Like, I think it's changing, right? I think it's going to have to. I think we're going to have new roles that don't exist today to ensure consistency on, the technology side, but also the implementation side. I think we're going to have folks with that as their jurisdiction. Just like right now, we have sort of IT, and in some cases, IT is owning AI. In some cases, marketing's leading the charge because they're a little more risk averse than IT. I think we're almost going to have a separate category for some of this stuff, at least in the short term while we're navigating it. But you're right, like the specific how you use these tools is almost as it's more important than the tools you're using right now. But the
Okay.
tools we're using are become I mean they become that we've gone from like bow and arrows to nuclear weapons within the last 2 months, right? We really have. Like this the power of these tools is so much more than they were even a couple of months ago.
And I want to add on to your note, Adam. Not only is it collecting and creating the context, it's also formatting it in a way that AI can read properly. I've seen remarkable difference in uploading our brand guide as a PDF versus having AI turn that into a markdown file, which it reads way easier, and then using that markdown file to create what I want. If I upload a PDF of our
100
brand
percent.
guides and try to have it create a slide deck, it's okay. It's not perfect, but I've seen remarkable difference in uploading that as a markdown file and then trying to create a presentation using our brands, and it's like night and day.
You're 100% correct.
So we got to learn, we got to re-educate ourselves on how to use these tools correctly, right? And not going in. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago where someone was criticizing you, Adam, about they put in a prompt suggestion that you'd made and it gave garbage, right? But they didn't have context. They didn't know how to use the tool properly. So yeah, we're gonna have to educate ourselves. And that's where I think the org structure might end up having to change. We might have to have someone in the organization that's their job is to make sure everyone's trained, everyone's knowledgeable, everyone's following standard operating procedures around
Director
AI.
of context.
We've had those
Maybe
conversations,
so.
and we've had those conversations too around bringing someone on board whose specific job it is to whether it's their specific job is building agents and getting people's workflows. But I do think there's also a piece of that where it is, okay, well, training and education probably lives under that role or department as well.
For sure. Yeah, let's all just go hire Jeanette Rouse for our organizations. Just clone her a bunch and we all need a Jeanette. She's actually going to come on the show in the next few weeks and talk about how she's using Claude with another guest too. So we're
I'm
looking
excited
forward to
for
that.
that.
All right, Matt. So you're relatively newbie to the destination marketing space. You came from the sports industry, right? You worked with a couple of different franchises in the sports world. How long have you been on the DMO world now?
3 years as of last
Okay.
week. I've
Yeah.
got a got an interesting background where my first degree was actually in engineering. Got an engineering degree, decided didn't want to work at a computer all day, even though I'm still working at a computer all day. But went back to school, studied sports marketing, got my MBA and a degree in sports marketing. Spent about 12, 13 years in the sports industry before trying to find a spot here in Dallas to be near family, and happened to land in this industry and have loved it ever since.
Yeah, well, you're with a good DMO too. You've got a great CMO there. She's been on the show before and you guys are doing some amazing things. Got a great brand. I love one of the things Jennifer's always said is, which is, Dallas doesn't have an awareness problem. It has a consideration problem, right? And it's so true. So
It's
tell
one of
us,
the,
like, go
yeah,
ahead.
I was gonna say, some of the things I've loved about my job is, and that's one of them. And we'll jump around here, but it is a challenge. I love Dallas as a market because, like you said, everyone in the world knows Dallas, but with thousands of destinations across the world, are they considering taking their family vacation or spending their leisure time in Dallas? Maybe not. I think if, the challenge of persuading them to do so has been something I've loved most about trying to shift those stereotypical thoughts around Dallas and everyone's riding a horse to work and we're all, gun-toting rednecks. Like, I think being a part of developing a destination brand that Jennifer has helped create over the last 2.5 years, 3 years has been one of my favorite things about working in this DMO. I don't know if I started my industry in a DMO that had a defined brand and a leisure destination, it might be a little bit different than what I've experienced thus far.
Yeah. Well, good team, good vision, good strategy helps a lot, right? In terms of you being able to create. So tell me, before you came to DMO world, did you know what a DMO was? Were you even familiar with that category?
A little bit because while I was in undergrad, I went to school in Orlando, hospitality, destination capital of the world for many. And I spent time working at Walt Disney World. So I was a valet bellman at the Contemporary Resort there on property. There's a humongous hospitality school called the Rosen School at UCF. So I've heard of DMOs and heard of some more, back then it was CVBs, still heard of CVBs, but didn't really know what they did or why they were around except for selling convention business. So I think it was kind of a wake-up call to learn and understand the industry as it is today.
Yeah. So when you first interviewed for this role, what was it that excited you about coming into this space?
There are a few things in particular as the destination. There are a lot of things going on right now. We have FIFA World Cup here now. When I
Oh,
joined
I'm
3 years
coming for England, Croatia in June.
that's
I'm
the
going to be
ticket.
there.
Well, if you've got an extra one, let me know. I've put in for every ticket and I still have not received my ticket to any game. So,
Yeah.
but 3 years ago, that was, they had just announced the cities that they were playing in. I obviously have a sports background. To me, that was huge. The sports commission ladders up is a department within Visit Dallas. So even though I wouldn't be working necessarily on the event itself, having some sort of hand in the pot to help make that a worldwide event was attractive. Our convention center construction had just or project had just passed. When I was at Daytona International Speedway, we underwent a $300 million renovation of that facility, and I loved being a part of kind of a rebuild. I see myself as a builder. At that time at Daytona, I came in and we were able to redevelop the website, the mobile app, our digital strategy all around this new facility. So having that opportunity to come in and do something similar around our convention center, and then kind of like we had already talked on the destination brand, they were about 6 months into that project, and Jennifer had shared what we're working on, and just the opportunity to land at a destination that's really going through a brand refresh. Really trying to establish an identity really attracted me to this opportunity.
So it was more about the function of the work and you being able to contribute and create. Did you think much about like the purpose of the DMO, like why it exists and the good that it does for a community? Was that a factor?
Not when I joined. I think
Yeah.
having joined and now, I've started the CDMA program and started learning about even more, going through the PDM program and learning everything I can about a DMO's purpose, and even that's now shifting, right, over the last, 4 or 5 years, and taking on more of a community involvement role has been something that I've really had to quickly learn. But when I took the role itself, no, I don't think that was the biggest piece of why I jumped on
Yeah.
board.
Yeah, I don't think we sell that enough. Like our community should know what we do, right? I think we've been talking a lot here in Myrtle Beach about how people just think we do promotion, right? We do advertising or we call it marketing, but we're really talking about advertising. They don't know that we help with air service. They don't know that we're helping to bring events like this right now while we're recording this. The World's Strongest Man competition is going on here in Myrtle Beach. That doesn't just happen without a DMO working with them to make sure it's a good fit and offering some sponsorship dollars and things like that. And so we're really trying to all the sports tourism, the fact that Myrtle Beach has gone from a 3 month destination to essentially now an 11 month destination. It doesn't happen without deliberate strategies and efforts from the DMO, but we don't talk about that. We don't talk about how we're improving the quality of life. We don't talk about how we're driving the economy and bringing prosperity to our businesses and our residents nearly enough into our local community. So I think that's an opportunity for us as we sort of go through this next evolution of CVBs, DMOs to whatever we become on the other side. I think we've got to do it in partnership, in conjunction with our residents and our businesses locally.
I
No
think,
question.
National Travel and Tourism Week every year in the beginning of May is a great reminder that,
Yeah.
oh yeah, we need to be doing this and talking to our community, engaging with them and sharing what we do more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost feel this is me being overly critical, but we're trying to be a little more provocative on the show. And NTTW, I think the spirit of it is right. I think the execution is wrong. I think a lot of DMOs see it as a checkbox. Right. Oh, it's NTTW. I'm going to take the toolkit. I'm going to put out a press release. I might do one or two media interviews. And then that week's over. I might do a proclamation at my city council. But then we're done. Right. Like, this should be a drumbeat that's going on 24/7, 365. Right. It shouldn't be confined to 1 week. And yeah, it's a good time to remind us. But I think it makes us lazy in some cases and lets us say, well, we checked the box, so we don't need to do it the rest of the other 51 weeks a year.
Yeah, no, we've started to leverage it. We've created an event last year called Can Do Spirit Day, which leans into our Maverick Can Do Spirit brand. We leverage that as an organic tie-in, an opportunity for that event. But we've then expanded that brand from a year to a year-long prospect where we now have,
Yeah.
we focus on our can doers, as we call them, and focusing on telling those stories of the people of Dallas. I think National Travel and Tourism Week gives us a great organic opportunity to make it about that day or that week. But I agree. I think 100% we need to be talking about economic impact of what tourism drives to our community all year round.
Yeah, direct and indirect. So tell me, when you came in, what surprised you the most about the DMO world when you came in?
I think one of the first things was the amount of different vendors there are. I mean, everything from data attributions to maps to, you name it. If you have a great idea, this industry can give you an opportunity to sell your idea to DMOs. I
There's a
would.
lot of money in the DMO space, so people are after it.
There was, I think, my second year here, I had the great opportunity to go to the e-tourism event they held every December, where it's like speed dating. And they invite some DMOs in, and you get 7 minutes with a vendor, and whistle goes off, and you move on. While it can be a little overbearing, I think it's a great opportunity for someone, especially who is new to the industry, to learn and understand so many different players in the space and so many different things in the span of 2 days. I loved that event, but that was kind of the first thing that surprised me. It's like, oh my God, there's a vendor for everything.
And if there's not Adam will create the solution. He likes to
Or
do that.
AI, right? Or AI may now do it. Second, I think for me, it was the politics. I come from an industry in sports where, whether it's the sanctioning body or the team, there's an owner. That person owns it. It's their money. You've got one, point of contact who you're laddering up to. Now, as stewards of taxpayer dollars, there's a lot more at stake. And navigating those politics is something that is definitely interesting, and I've had to learn very quickly.
Do you feel like this stuff you brought in from the sports side or your engineering background even that you've instilled within Visit Dallas that wasn't here before? What have you brought in from the outside?
Well, can I, before we, because I feel like that might be a little bit of a subject change from the two things that you just mentioned, Matt. Stuart, do you mind if I dig into
No,
the
of
vendor side
course.
of things real quick? So one of the things that I think is fascinating about this industry is there are tons of vendors, but what I've learned is this industry, a lot of people call it a show up industry, where like if you keep showing up for the industry, it's very likely that you'll grow and people will do business with you. But I actually see that as a flaw, not a benefit. And the flaw is that we're actually really slow. Like everybody kind of stays in wait and see mode with vendors in a lot of cases. And they want to see them kind of prove what they're capable of. But what that results in is a slowing of innovation. I actually think a better path for vendor selection in general would be, who do I believe is going to continue to progress and evolve and innovate? And it's almost like you're placing bets on the future of a vendor or the future of an idea, because I think those are two different things, right? But a lot of ideas, I think, don't perpetuate because there's not enough steam to get them through to the end of the innovation. I shouldn't say the end of the innovation, but at least the target point to where it becomes scalable for DMOs. And so I really think that DMOs need to change the way they think about vendors in the destination marketing space. Who do I believe is going to create the solution that's going to help progress us forward? And how do I place financial bets on that so that I can get the technology that I need? I think that would be a different perspective that could be really valuable for this space. And I think the wait and see mentality has caused some of the, Stuart talks about how we're 10 years behind the hotel industry. I think part of that is we're slow to adopt new technology.
Yeah, but I mean, let's strip that back a little bit then, Adam. Let's play with that a little bit. Like, why is that, right? It's primarily risk aversion, right? There's very little incentive for us to take a risk in the current paradigm because it's almost impossible to go to your board and say, we took a bet, we took a risk, it failed, the results weren't what we expected, right? That's not a conversation right now today we're structured to have comfortably, or even allowed to have, period, I should say. So we the inertia is with the big folks, right? Because they're proven, there's a guarantee, somewhat of a guaranteed return, even though there could be a better return somewhere else. I'd rather settle for the guarantee than take a risk. It limits my floor, but it also limits my ceiling. And so I'd rather stay in this range than in a bigger range.
And I would call that the cycle of stagnancy.
You like coming up with these little terms, right? One of these days, one's
Oh
going to
yeah,
stick, and you're going to
TM.
hear other people saying it, but
I
I
think that
think at
also,
best is still illusion of relevance. But
and I think that ties a little bit into the politics, right? Where I think we're risk adverse because we are spending taxpayer dollars. It's harder
yeah.
to justify to the board taking a risk like that when it's money that we are trying to maximize every single dollar
Yeah.
because it's being scrutinized.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do think those DMOs that do take risks and take, technology leaps of faith, you've seen a lot of them have paid out. And then whether it's through just creating more efficiencies or being a step ahead of the rest of the industry, I think a lot of that comes to fruition.
Well, you
Yeah,
get
for
to shape
sure.
the product. Like, that's one of the things I
Yeah.
think is really underrated is by being an early adopter. Yes, it may not be all the way there, but it would be very difficult for a destination to develop the innovation itself. But by being an early adopter, you can shape it and have major influence over what other people who are in the wait and see mode ultimately have to adopt. It was tailor-made for your destination because you were one of the pilots.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough though. I mean, speaking from our experience, no one that listens to this show doesn't know this, right? But we came at it when I joined the industry 5 years ago. I came in with this cavalier mentality. We were going to be scrappy. We were going to take risks. I was either going to change the industry or get fired. Have not been fired yet. Actually got promoted, which is kind of weird, right? But as I've gone on, I've become less risky, right? Because the incentive structure has changed now. When I came in, I had nothing to lose, and now we have more to lose. But it's not that we're not doing as much of the crazy stuff we were doing. Well, maybe that's not true. Maybe we are doing a little less. We're certainly not talking about it nearly as much, right? We're still doing it. Like, there's a percentage of our budget which is for encouraging experimentation and taking risks. But you're not seeing the big swings from Visit Myrtle Beach today that you were seeing 3, 4 years ago, right? Even 2 years ago. And so, yes, we're coming out with season two of Traveling the Spectrum and season three of Traveling the Spectrum. And yes, we're going to do more innovative, award-winning podcasts. And yes, our website won, and it's at the Tourism Award, won the best website award. Like, we're still crushing it, but I don't think we're in the mindset we were, where we're just willing to swing for the fences with something with no guarantee, right? The incentives just aren't there, and actually, there's counter incentives which tell us not to do that at this point. It's really hard, man.
I want to shift gears a little bit just because I think it touched on something you were sort of talking about. One of the frustrations I've found in joining the industry has been the reliance on just a few major players. And you touched on it. For me, that was the one of the biggest surprises or frustrations was there are two major CMS players and two major CRM players. When I was in sports, I mean, there were countless CMS systems and a few major players, whether it was Salesforce or HubSpot on the CRM side, but like the fact that almost, I don't know, 90 to 95% of the DMO space has market share of two major platforms was one of the biggest surprises and one of the biggest frustrations. And I think an opportunity. I think we're starting to see some other DMOs jump out there and try some things with, like you said, building a HubSpot and customizing it towards them. That's a leap of faith that I think a lot of DMOs right now are afraid to take. But that was one of the bigger frustrations I've found.
I think the technology is giving people a little more comfort now, right? AI makes some of that experimentation a little bit easier, defrays the cost in the timeline to implement. But what's interesting about this, like, I'm going to go back to what you said near the beginning of this conversation, which was there's so many vendors in this space, right? But they're all doing little niche-y things. And then, but then for the, like, the core, there's only like a couple of main players. Like, it's such a weird ecosystem that we live within. There's all these little fringy things. No one's really created like the soup to nuts stack for the industry. So we're reliant on, like, often one or two big behemoths was for core stuff, and then a ton of little periphery stuff. It's such a weird paradigm.
For sure. I mean, it's been one of the most frustrating things. And not to say that either of those two behemoths aren't great. It's just puzzled me. I'm like, why is Salesforce not a bigger player or whoever? Like, it's just weird to
Any
me.
industry needs a true free market to thrive. Right. And so if there's only two players, it makes it really challenging to thrive.
Yeah. I would say, another kind of frustration or thing that's maybe it's not a frustration, and this is obviously not true for all DMOs, but in sports, you know your entire ROI, because you control the entire customer journey from advertising. I know exactly how many seats I sold at Daytona International Speedway, if I sold all 100,000 or if I'm missing, 10 to 15,000. The over-reliance on third parties to attribute what we're doing towards an actual visit has been something that's it's taken me some time to learn and adjust to. But and some DMOs book their own rooms. I know, we don't, so we're still relying on attribution towards our marketing efforts. But that's been another change for me in this industry, is like in sports, I knew exactly where my dollars were going and the exact ROI on what that was.
Well, I think that problem's going to get worse. It's not going to get better, right? In the short term, there are solutions to that. Like you can use, you can sort of get directionally, you can get information through tools like Arrivalist, right? What we do here, because we're a very heavy independent hotel, we use a tool called Flip2. So we can actually not just see transactions on our own website, which is a fraction of the transactions. We can also see transactions on our independent hotel. About 80 hotels in our area, we can see transactions. So we have a lot of visibility into the transaction. My fear is what you're saying today is the best situation we're ever going to be in, because tomorrow we're going to run ads to drive awareness. That's not going to be in a web ecosystem. Like, are we still going to be sending people to a website that then sends clicks to our members in 5 years? Probably not, right? People are going to be getting inspired by our social video content, then go into their chat GPT of choice, the LLM of choice. And we're going to have zero visibility into what inputs and outputs happened in that black box. And then people may or may not show up in market, and we'll have no way to join any of the dots, So right now, we have more visibility than we're going to have in the future, unless someone steps up and solves that problem. Like, to me, that would be the number one place. If I was a technology company right now, the number one place I would be spending money is how can we actually measure real impact and help DMOs decide where to invest their dollars, right? Because our dollars are going to become more precious. There's a downward pressure on our budgets. We're going to have to be way more discerning, way more calculated in how we invest, but no one's really seeing. There's people are throwing dashboards, but the dashboards are focusing on the vanity metrics. They're not really focusing on the real ROI stuff. That's the gap we've got to try to close. But I think part of that is also we got to build relationships with our businesses, with our hotels, with our restaurants, with our attractions, with our retail stores, to try to build that bridge. If there's trust there, they're going to open up data in a way that's protects them, but also benefits them through the
Yeah.
insights that we can provide.
Stuart, I think that is a dead end road, trying to close that attribution gap. And the reason I think that is you would have to have all your hotel partners and whatever other membership is part of your, I know Myrtle Beach is a membership organization. Everybody would have to be using the same technology, or at least have the
Yeah.
ability for all the technology to talk to each other.
Yes, 100%. That was impossible previously, right? But not today,
Yeah, but not
because
everybody's going to be willing to share their data, at least
but
from what
that's what
I've
I'm saying.
seen.
You've got to work on the relationships today. Like, we're actively working right now with our attractions and with our hotels to solve this problem, because and they're very open to it. We've agreed in principle that they benefit from us being able to invest the dollars better, right? Ultimately, that's the value
Yeah.
proposition, that they can get insights they didn't have, that we can be more effective at investing the community's money on their behalf, right? But we've also got to put in the protection so that their data isn't, it doesn't become a competitive disadvantage to them, that their competitors don't see insights that they wouldn't want. So, but in principle, we haven't had one community members say, absolutely not, you're not getting access to our data. They're
Well,
all like, we're open to it. We've just got to develop the framework to do it.
but carry that logic through as a vendor. Like, let's say theoretically that Visit Myrtle Beach as a community is actually going to be able to pull this off, right? And get everyone on the same page and willing to share their data and get everything talking to each other. And you know what? There's a vendor that says, Myrtle Beach, I'm going to be your partner on this, and I'm going to build the data bridge using the data that you're getting permission to do. What is the realistic future that they could actually get other destinations to be aligned enough to take the risk to put the investment in to build that kind of technology when maybe Myrtle Beach is the only one that's ever going to be able to get their crap together and share the data. That is an incredible amount to ask a vendor from an investment and innovation perspective without a commitment. Like, I would need to see, and by the way, I'm not a SaaS company, and so I'm speaking for the SaaS companies that I communicate with. I wouldn't be the one to even attempt to solve this problem. I think there's a lot better players in there to do that. But I would have to have a commitment from 50 DMOs that if I solve this problem, you guys will handle the stakeholder relationships and that you'll sign on for X number of years sight unseen. Otherwise, I don't see how you can justify the build.
Yeah, well, I am looking at completely different than you. I'm not looking to create a profitable business model. I'm looking to solve a problem, right?
No,
So
but that problem
from
can't
our
be solved
perspective,
unless there's a profitable business model to be built on
no,
top
not
of it,
at
right?
all. Because you're assuming there's a vendor involved. Why do I need a vendor? Why can't I have a contractor or an employee that builds this? Like, especially today. I mean, if Adam Stoker can build a website today from scratch, then Adam Stoker tomorrow can build an interface to any product using APIs, right? So all I need is a couple of really smart engineers that I happen to know because I come from the SaaS industry, right? I built software for hotels for 20 years. So I don't think I need a vendor in this scenario. I think we can do it either in-house or with contractors for cheap, for not a lot. I'm not talking millions of dollars,
We've talked a lot, and Matt, sorry, this is sometimes Stuart and I get arguing with each
You're
other,
good.
and that's how it goes. But we've talked before about one of the major issues industry-wide is the lack of standardization in a lot of cases, like even the role of a DMO, there's ambiguity around that. And to me, this is one more, okay, this destination has built its own attribution tool. This destination's built its own attribution tool. And now we got the same standardization issue. And I'm not saying there should be one vendor that's the standard for everything. It's just fascinating to me to think, like, if you guys built that will solve the Myrtle Beach problem. I'm not sure that will solve the industry problem.
Yeah, but I'm wearing my Visit Myrtle Beach president hat right now, right? I'm trying to
Sure.
solve my problem. I'm not trying, I mean, I'm trying to save the industry through this podcast, but my day-to-day job is focused solely on Myrtle Beach. I don't know if what we're doing is repeatable or scalable. I don't know. Right now, that's not my priority. I don't care, right? I believe the problem can be solved, and then I believe that if we can solve the problem, then others can solve the problem, and that's where I think within a few years, technology is going to be such that it becomes a lot less costly, a lot more efficient to solve these kind of complex problems. So,
And it may not be the platform that solves the problem, it may be the process that solves the
right, for
problem, right? I
sure.
think
Yeah.
for us, we started this conversation around AI, and whether you believe in the SaaSpocalypse that's going to happen, we've started to develop our own apps for programs on our side through Lovable and Replit and other programs. We're at a spot where if there's a solution out there, if it's costly, just build it yourself. Build a rep, like do your own. I think we're now at that pivot point where I think some
Yeah.
organizations that understand the technology are going to start building their own
Well,
SaaS.
and
And that's why I think you, yeah.
if somebody does solve it, they should immediately go start their own company and sell it to everybody else, right?
Spoken like a true vendor. But that's why I think we're going to have to start thinking about the org chart and have more technologists and engineers in our team, right? Because just like we're going to have people that are copywriters or social media managers or whatever, I think the building of tools is going to become a necessary component of the future. Because I think most of the SaaS software that any of us subscribe to, we maybe use 20% of the functionality, right? Maybe 30, maybe 40, maybe 50, but it's certainly not 80 or 90% of the functionality. And if we can get something that's an MVP that gets us 90% of the way there to what we're using today for 20% of the cost, why would we not do it? It would be reckless for us to invest our community's money in an inefficient way. So, Matt, we're
A
getting a
part,
little. We went off on a big old tangent. We're getting a little low on time. I sort of want to bring it back to you a little bit.
sure.
What are your other learnings? What is the pet peeves or the opportunities or your vision for where we're heading? What we can learn from folks outside? And I'm a big believer in learning from outside. Like if you look at major disruptions throughout every industry throughout history, it usually comes from someone coming out of the industry and bringing in a new perspective. So what do you want to go from here with this conversation?
Yeah, I think there's one or a couple in particular, one that I believe you've been talking about on a lot of on this podcast quite a bit, and it's something I think sports does really well, and it's marketing the event, right? The experience. I think, we've talked about destination brand, and I still think destination brand has a place and is very important, but the rise of experiences and events in destinations as a travel motivator is something I think we can all take a playbook out of sports and how to understand how do we mobilize an event or an experience and really rally behind and promote that as the travel motivator to get people to come to our destination. I think that's number one.
Couldn't agree more. Could not
Yep.
agree more.
And then for me, it's and many destinations do this fantastically already, but I think it's still a journey for many of us included. And that's just deeper storytelling. I think we've all had the conversation around how important is our content on our website going to be in the future if it's all just top 10 restaurants and top 10 this? But I think what AI can't pull from other sources is those deeper story-driven content pieces that really tug at the heartstrings and kind of motivate and inspire people to travel to your destination. I think a lot of destinations do this well, but this is something that sports does at a fantastic level. I mean, if you watch the NFL draft that was last night, it's all storytelling. Each individual, they're telling the stories of the player and their background and, how they've got to where they were. And, from our perspective, telling the stories of the people behind our destination and what makes each DMO fantastic and each city unique, I think is something that we could pull a page out of the sports playbook for.
Yeah, I love it. And you hit on something really, really important there with the NFL analogy, right? Because the stories aren't about the franchises. They're not about the teams, right? They're about the people, the individuals, right? People want to see themselves and relate to people. And so, where we need to be putting all our focus from a content generation perspective is on first person experiential perspectives, right? How did this person with these specific attributes or demographics or, put in the psychographics, whatever it is. How did this person, how do I relate to them and what was the experience they had? I think those are the stories we absolutely need to be telling more frequently. Like we're really looking at evaluate. We're actually looking with Adam. He's got a tool that he's building too. But how do we scale that? We've got a content army right now. Let's say a couple of dozen people that create content for us. But if we really want to dominate the zeitgeist with Myrtle Beach, we're getting drowned out by the hundreds of thousands of people that are posting on social media. How do we curate that better? How do we nudge it in a direction better? So how do we create a marketplace for people to get inspired to create content that they can monetize, but also that they can get recognition for? So that's somewhat something we're really toying with. I couldn't agree more. Storytelling is so
Yeah.
critical. It's not about the destination, it's about people's experiences.
I also think you're going to see a massive wave of destination-owned experiences coming up, meaning like festivals, events, stuff with a specific date tied to it to inspire travel on those specific shoulder seasons. I think that wave is coming because it's the thing that destinations can control if they build it. Of course, there's people that won't do that, but I do think we're going to see a massive wave, massive increase of that kind of thing.
The longer I go, the more conversations I have, the more I'm leaning that way. Like I'm resistant to it. It's a pain in the butt to run events. Like it really is. We visit Myrtle Beach before I joined, used to do that back in the Brad Dean days, and they got out of it because it's so much work and energy. But I think if we structure it right, and we work collaboratively with the community, so it's not all on our backs, but there's like a shared burden with your municipalities, with volunteers. It's been really impressive watching professional events in our backyard. Like we don't have a major sports franchise. We've got minor league baseball, right? But we're bringing in events like the World's Strongest Man. We're bringing in more importantly for this story, the One Flight Myrtle Beach Classic, which is going to be here Mother's Day weekend, right? Watching how they leverage the community to put on this world-class event. Like they get literally 1,300 local volunteers to help put that event on. And the volunteers actually have to pay to volunteer. They have to pay. So if you're a PGA Tour volunteer, you get some stuff, right? You get to play golf at that course, you get tickets to the rest of the event, but you're paying $100 for the privilege of volunteering and working a couple of days at the event. Like, that's shared burden, community responsibility. But if you talk to the volunteers, they feel ownership in it. They feel pride in it. They want to be a part of it, and they're happy to write a check to cover their food and their clothing costs. So I think we can reimagine how do events get put on, and really versus it being the DMO's event, making it the community's event, but really leaning into the community side. I think that's probably a blueprint we're going to
Yeah,
explore.
I think,
I like that.
as we talk about the evolution of what the DMO is, destination development is a massive piece of that, and we're going through that as well here in Dallas. And just understanding, we kind of, outside of the state fair, we really lack that signature event. We don't have a South by Southwest or Coachella or whatever it is. And I was similar to you, Stuart. And it's a lot of work. I come from a sports background where, we put on a 100,000 person event at the Daytona 500 every year. It's a massive 6 month, 8 month, 12 month long undertaking. But if we don't do it, who is? And if the destination is just going to wait along and rely on other people to help develop a signature event or signature experiences, we have to be the stewards and bringing the right stakeholders together to help us create those events and experiences.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more, man. What a great way to finish this. I think the future is asked to create, right? That's DMOs. I think if we continue to stick to the status quo and we continue to do the things to tomorrow that we did today, we're going to be obsolete. But there's people like you, Matt. There's many others that have come on this show and in the industry at large that are really pushing the envelope and asking the questions, why not? They're asking the questions, what if? They're having courage, they're having imagination. And I am very excited about the future of DMOs because of folks like you. If people want to find you, Matt, where can they do that?
Best place is LinkedIn. I'm right there, Matthew Vincent under LinkedIn. Happy to link up. I'll be at Destinations International's event here in Portland here in a few months.
Great.
Come put your beer on Adam's tab.
That's awesome. Adam, they want to find you.
Yeah, Matt, this was a lot of fun. Really appreciate you coming on, and thanks for humoring us and rescheduling a couple times and making it happen. This has been awesome. If anybody wants to find me, you can find me Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. You can find me on LinkedIn or, of course, on Tourism IQ.
And destinationdiscourse.com.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And on destinationdiscourse.com.
There you go. And Adam, thank you for showing up today. Matt and I appreciate it.
I loved
Hey,
having
I want.
our one-on-one conversation last time, Stuart, but it's
Yeah,
definitely
I
better.
enjoyed it
It's
too.
definitely better in three.
I don't know. I preferred Adam not being in the room, but it's fine. He sort of brings down the average IQ. It's all good. You
Yeah,
can follow.
that, I mean, that reflected in your intro for sure.
Touche. Touche. Well, you can find me, Stuart.Butler, at visitmodelbeach.com. Check out destinationdiscourse.com. It's a fun little site, and Adam's super proud of it. So tell him how great it is.
I am.
Please leave a review. Do you know what? It's been 3 months on Apple since we had a review. And most of our
Oof.
listeners are on Apple. We get a lot of comments on Spotify. We have not had a
Oh.
review in 3 months on like a written review.
Are you calling our desties lazy?
You did. I'm just saying that they're very busy,
Hmm.
but we would really appreciate it if they could take just 30 seconds to go to Apple and leave a nice review. Tell Adam what accent you want him to read it out in, because that's still a thing.
Or tell him that you hate the song too. You can join me on the hate train. There
Oh,
you
let's
go.
boycott it. Yeah,
It's
let's do that. Let's get it pulled down.
gonna
That'd
take
be
a
great.
lot of reviews to change the public sentiment on that one.
All right. Well, I'll take it. I'll take it. This is a win-win. Thank you for
Right,
listening.
guys.
Until
Thanks
next
a
time,
lot.
this has been Destination Discourse. Adam, you didn't say thank you. You
It's
said it
because I
before I
said it
did,
while you
man.
were saying it and I screwed up.